Always Hole into Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Jazzat Maja, Chris Fuchs, Thomas Navin, Joe McIndo, Steve Rogers, Cavante Chillis, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Casso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Braden Arnold, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Darren Kirsch, Catherine, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, and Kathleen Holland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
Hey guys, this is Laura Vandervoort. I played Kara Kent / Supergirl on Smallville, and you are listening to Always Hold On to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold into Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined once again by Mr. Eric Cowan to talk about another episode and story arc of Smallville Season 11. What's up, Eric?
Hey, what's going on?
Nothing much, man. So we are going to start a new, slightly new format for the next five episodes because as we said before, Eric and I, you know, we kind of forgot a little bit about, you know, how this whole Smallville comic book series was laid out. And there are five specials, season 11 specials. So for the next five episodes, we're going to be covering the next story arc as well as one of the specials. So in this episode, we're talking about the next story arc, which is Argo. And we're talking about Smallville season 11 special number one, Effigy. And that also answers our question if Batman shows up again, because he plays a big role in the first special, doesn't he, Eric?
Oh, yes, he does.
So we'll start out with the next story arc / episode of season 11, which is Argo. And this sees the return of a lot of characters and elements from the show. I'll just say it at the top, Eric. I didn't really like this one as much as any of the other ones. I felt like it was really cramped and full of characters and story plots. But basically, to summarize shortly, so everybody can understand what I mean, is we start out with Booster Gold, and then he comes with his Legion ring because it activates and wants to take him to the future, but it needs to find Clark first because it's Clark's Legion ring. And then we go to the future, and the Legion are involved in some shenanigans, and they're at war with New Krypton, which is an orbit of Earth, kind of like Superman Returns, I guess. And then Supergirl is there being held captive by Earth, but she's like a double agent, and there's just a lot going on. Doomsday shows up at the end. They want to resurrect Feyora, who Zod killed for her child. So it's very full of continuity, but I feel like they tried to do way too much with this one, and it didn't all come together for me. What about you?
Yeah, and then something I kind of didn't like about it is you basically get to see what I'm assuming is the final fate of Doomsday, and it does not involve the death of Superman whatsoever, and it doesn't even happen anywhere near our time. When Clark buried him underground, he buried him underground for over 1,000 years.
Yeah, so I was thinking, like, oh, is this... I was a little confused because I was like, oh, did they clone a new Doomsday? Did they find the Doomsday? Oh, this is Doomsday. And there was no fight in between. Like in Smallville, I always assumed, okay, he buried him in the Earth, and then he'll show up, you know, 15 years from now and kill Superman, right? In
Smallville 10 years time. From now or something.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, to your point, this is... We've now seen the beginning and end of Doomsday on Smallville, which, and I was like, oh, that's a weird choice. I don't know why they could have just, you know, in Clark's timeline, maybe he could have not fought him yet. But in the real timeline, the Legion could have said, like, oh, yeah, you're going to fight him again and it'll be bad, but you'll be fine. Or so, I don't know.
Yeah.
So it was just, I feel like they just tried to put way too much in here. And it was a little confusing in some areas just too, because it was like Supergirl's a double agent or something, and there's all these Kryptonians, and I don't know. Why has the planet come all the way over here, like rebuilt from the crystals? And I like all like the season 9. I like how they kind of finally combined Supergirl with all these Kryptonians from Argo, and all these terms from the comics, you know, but they did it in kind of a confusing, complicated way. So.
Yeah. Well, at least you do get to find out what happened to Supergirl while she wasn't around at the end of the show. So, you know, where she went, you do get to find out the fate of all the Kryptonians, the Kandorians.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. I didn't dislike it, but you know, a TV show is what this is based on, and the TV show is all about destiny, what Clark is destined to become. Well, he's destined to get killed by Doomsday, not what happens in this comic. So,
well, yeah, even in if you remember season 8, Cosmic Boy shows up in the finale, and he says like Doomsday will kill you. There's nothing that can stop him from killing you. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, he was obviously talking about not this time, but you know, 10 years in the future or something. That's fine. But apparently not. So they kind of ignored that. And
I'm kind of wondering if I maybe missed this or something. Okay, did they explain for sure that they released Doomsday from underground? I can't really remember how they explained that he came back out. Do you remember?
Well, they were digging for Feyore's grave, which apparently Clark buried her like underneath something, and or maybe Zod buried her underneath something. But yeah, because they had that throne. That like Kryptonian throne room or something, and they were facing this abyss. And I think in the process of looking for Feyora's resting place, they found Doomsday, because Clark says like, "Oh, I should have buried him deeper," or something like that. So I think it was a byproduct of them looking for, you know, this mythical, well, not mythical because he existed, but like this savior, this unborn child of Feyora's that Zod killed, at least the clones of them, you know, from season 9. So I think that's how they found Doomsday, but it was, to me, it was confusing as well, because I'm like, did they clone Doomsday? Did they, because for a little bit, he has the look of the comic book Doomsday, which I thought was cool. He's, you know, the when he first showed up, he's the green kind of suit on with the red eyes and stuff, and then he like tears out of that as they go. So there are a lot of comic book elements in this. So, but yes, it was confusing.
I like how the Kandorians have a very, it's almost like a Catholic feel to it. Like the it's 1,000 years in the past now, and they're basically worshiping, you know, the baby Jesus, the Virgin Mary. It's very, very similar to that.
Yeah, there was some definite vibes there. I picked up on that as well.
All right, so do you think it's possible, and this right here is really a stretch, just something that's left out, but maybe maybe Clark was killed by him 980 years ago, and then for some reason, once again, instead of Clark killing him, which is what happens in the story, they kill each other. Instead, somehow he reburies him, or the team reburies him or something like that. So this is maybe their third meeting. That way, that kind of goes along with destiny. I mean, there's nothing that says that's not a possibility, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, they don't go out of their way and rule that out. So we can put that in our head canon that in Clark's timeline,
we can pretend.
Yeah, that in Clark's timeline, this is the second time he fights Doomsday, but in Doomsday's timeline, it's the third time he fights Clark, if that makes sense. So let's go. I like that. Let's go with that, Eric. So, but you know, as for Supergirl, I'm glad they brought Supergirl back, because like, Supergirl was always one of these unanswered, like they just, you know, write her off the show for a while and then explain why she was gone on a regular basis. And they even kind of mention that. It's kind of a lot of things in the comic book are kind of meta, which I have enjoyed so far, because she's telling Clark like, "Hey, I never really felt like I had a place in Smallville." Did you like Supergirl on Smallville? What did you think of her being a character on the show?
On Smallville, yeah. Like when she first arrived or whatever, a lot of times she had an attitude, and that attitude was turned up to 10 in this comic book.
They always find a way to have them fight for some reason. They're like small was very like, let's have Superman and Supergirl at odds. And I think maybe once or twice, like when they first meet or there's some misunderstanding, but like they kept it going here. And I picked up on that as well. I'm like, oh, here we go. Superman and Supergirl not getting along.
Well, at least they didn't go the Supergirl TV route of where Supergirl just beats Superman's butt like it's nothing.
I agree with that. I totally agree with that. And I know we mentioned that before in one of our conversations. And yeah, you and I are in alignment there. Can't they just be equals? You know, I mean, Brother Kryptonian, they did go out of their way to say how Supergirl is stronger than Superman in the Supergirl the TV show, the current TV show. And I'm like, I don't know about that. But anyway.
And then they fought and she knocked him unconscious. And then he made sure to make a point later on that he was at 100% power and he was giving it his all. And she still beat him. I'm just like, God, that sucks.
Yeah, and then he leaves Earth and he's like, they don't need me when they have you. Like, have we learned nothing from Superman 2 versus Superman Returns? Like, Superman, you can't just leave. You know, you gotta yeah. Stay. There are things for you to do. But, you know, so speaking of Supergirl here, it was funny that she's like, hey, well, you finally found out what happened to your cousin. And Superman's like, oh, sorry, you know, the end of the world was kind of busy. But it was funny how, you know, in season 10, it's established that, you know, Clark knows she's around doing stuff. And then you get to the finale. Obviously, she leaves the episode before this in prophecy. She goes to the future with the Legion ring because Jor-El tells her to, which I don't know. You know, that was weird how she like, talks to Jor-El now. Like, Jor-El didn't like her at first, and now she's, like, doing Jor-El's missions. But it was amusing to think, like, yeah, Clark, did you never stop and think about what happened to your cousin? She just disappeared off the face of the earth, right?
Yeah, another interesting thing from the show is, all right, like in all the comic books, Superman came to Earth first. He was Superman before she ever arrived. So she's basically named after him. He's Superman, she's Supergirl. In the TV show, they actually named her Supergirl before he was ever Superman. So he's kind of named after Supergirl.
Well, that, you know, that was always a problem when she came on the show. And that's why I kind of want to ask you what your thoughts were of that. Because when they say they're bringing Supergirl on, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, this is something that should happen when he's an established Superman, not before he's even Superman. But, you know, and the show obviously didn't really know how to balance that either because they, you know, she's in season 7, she shows up, they're at odds for a little bit, then he trains her, at you know, to be a Kryptonian on Earth, then she has, like, amnesia for half the season, and then Brainiac puts her in the Phantom Zone, and then we see her for one episode in season 8, and then she goes and leaves to go find, you know, the survivors from Krypton, which if she was just stuck around, like, you know, half a season later, she would have found a lot. And then she's not in season 9 at all. And then we have a couple of episodes with her in season 10 just to kind of say, hey, she's still around doing stuff. Remember her? So they obviously didn't know how to juggle the character on the show. And I like Laura Van Der Root as the character. And I feel like the problem, though, is yeah, you cannot have Supergirl already without Superman. And there is an episode of Smallville called Supergirl, but there's not an episode of Smallville called Superman, and I think that's a problem, right?
Interesting way for them to use these characters before he becomes Superman. He meets a ton of people before he ever becomes Superman in the show. So I don't mind that they used her. I do kind of mind that they actually called her Supergirl.
So as for the look, because we always got to talk about, you know, how did the comic translate the looks of all the characters? I feel like this was the weakest one so far because I did not see, I think the last issue I saw some more Tom Welling in the Superman, but before that, none of the characters looked anything like their Smallville selves. I mean, maybe Booster Gold, I guess, but everybody else, even the Legion, because, like, you know, they have Brainiac 5 in here and that's, you know, supposed to look like James Marsters, so nothing like him. You know, and Supergirl looked nothing like Laura Van Der Root. I mean, on some of the covers they do, but inside the book, they look nothing like them. So
it's interesting that on the covers that they do, because it looks nothing like Tom Welling, but in the book, it kind of does.
Yeah, and I don't know. That's just distracting to me because, as we say, this is a continuation of Smallville. Like, this is not a generic Superman comic book. So let's try and make them look like the characters. And I don't know. I guess Booster Gold looked like himself. I guess just generic blonde dude.
Yeah.
But yeah. And, you know, have you ever read the Jeff Johns, Gary Frank comic book, Superman and the Legion?
No, I haven't.
This story is kind of similar to that in some ways because it's Superman who goes to the future with the Legion, but Earth in the future has become very xenophobic and against aliens.
So very similar.
Yeah. So, and then people think that, it's funny how they've warped history to say that Superman was not an alien, you know? So he's there trying to, like, you know, point out to them, no, you got your history wrong. And it's really interesting. And it came out a few years before this. And I feel like they were definitely heavily inspired by this by that this comic arc was very much inspired by that one. So that one's much superior. So I recommend if this kind of story interested you, go check out that one. It's a lot more streamlined. I don't know, like I did really like the Booster Gold stuff. I like him and Skeets. I like their interplay and how he treats Skeets like crap, you know, but Skeets is always there to help him. I liked Booster Gold a lot on Smallville, and I liked how they continued the character. Like, even the whole story starts with him trying to save people, and they don't really like him. They prefer Blue Beetle. So I thought all that was real interesting, and how no one in the future knows who he is, and that kind of helps hurts his self-esteem and stuff like that. I wish they would have focused more on maybe just Booster Gold and the Legion and left out all the Kryptonian Supergirl Doomsday stuff for another story. They could have done Booster Gold and Smallville Legion of Superheroes and stuff, because we needed follow-up on those guys. I agree, because you know they were in a couple episodes in season 8 and then never heard from again other than Brainiac 5, you know. And I know the budget would have been way too high, but I think we all wanted to see one episode of Smallville, especially in season 9 or 10, where Clark goes to the future for like an episode with the ring, with the Legion. And I think, you know, not seeing that was a missed opportunity. And so I guess this was, they kind of gave it to us here, but it was way too convoluted with all this other story going on. So I like the idea, but I don't know why they felt they had to, I keep going back to this point, but they felt like they had to cram so much into this story. Although the end where he throws Doomsday into space, which is, you know, what Superman does with all his problems, right? I mean, he you know, threw him into the sun, and he was getting pulled in, you know, Green Lantern style, right? The gravity of the star. But then I like how the Legion kind of formed a human chain, and or not human chain, as it may be, and saved him from the sun. That was pretty cool.
Something, I'll tell you something I did enjoy. You know, trying to save those people's lives, and they're like, yeah, maybe the Blue Beetle can save us. And, you know, the episode with those two together, I thought that was pretty good, that nobody knows who he is, nobody cares. They would rather had Blue Beetle.
Yeah, I liked that too. I thought that was pretty funny. So yeah, these are all Booster Gold, right? This is another character. I'm like, yeah, let's see what happened to him on their Legion. Let's see what happened to them. So, but this one did devolve into like, here's a checklist of things that were left open on the show. Let's wrap them up, or at least catch up with them. And some were handled better than others.
Like you said, that they borrowed it from the Geoff Johns story or whatever. Like I didn't mind that. I didn't mind him going to the future. I didn't mind the xenophobic future. I didn't mind them, you know, letting us know about Kandor or even what's happened to Supergirl. It's just I don't really like the new, but I don't like it that much. And like I said, I really just don't like the Doomsday situation.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, being a 3-part story, and that's basically the whole third part, that's what it's building towards. I think, you know, in retrospect, that kind of undercuts, like, you didn't need Doomsday in this story. Maybe if you just take that one, maybe you're right, maybe you take that one thing out, everything else kind of like feels more in place, because Superman, he could have just fought the xenophobic Earth of the future and brought Krypton, new Krypton and Earth together and that kind of thing. But no, I do like the deep continuity of, like, especially the season 8, and it's a logical thing to meld Supergirl. You know, she you know, was looking for other Kryptonian survivors to go find, you know, the new Krypton that Clark founded. And I like how they all, you know, respect him, you know, not worship, but like at least kind of hold Clark in high regard as being their founder and savior, because that's exactly what he was. He sent them to new Krypton at the end of season 9. So there you go. I mean, that's pretty much my thoughts on Argo. I mean, not much to say. It is a shorter arc, so it's one less issue. So there's one less issue to talk about, so we kind of breeze through that. And also, there's no B-plots or anything as far as the other characters go, because, you know, the Lex and Lois's of the world, because we are in the future. And although we do set up that Lois is going to go to Africa to go investigate a superhero over there, and we'll cover that in a future Smallville special. But you remember who that is, right, Eric?
Of course, it's Black Panther. Duh. Yeah.
Yes, so can't wait for that crossover in Smallville Special number 2. But before we get there, let's talk about Smallville Special number 1 and Smallville Season 11 Special number 1, I should say. And as much as I thought the Argo story was meh, I really loved Effigy. I thought this was a really good story, and it focuses on John Jones, Martian Manhunter, which is a character who we saw a lot on Smallville, but I still wanted to see more. And obviously on Smallville, they have a budget, so we can't really see Martian Manhunter to its true extent. But in a comic book form, you can totally do that. So we have Martian Manhunter coming into conflict with a white Martian, which if anybody knows the mythology of, you know, Mars and all that. Speaking of Supergirl, we mentioned Supergirl a few times. They've delved into this there. Green Martians versus white Martians and things like that. And we have that going on. But, you know, Superman's busy. Him and Martian Manhunter are building a moon base at the very beginning. And then he goes. Superman gets called to go do something else. So Batman, you know, comes into this. And he plays a major role. And this is basically like a team-up one-off comic with Batman and Martian Manhunter. And it's great. I love their dynamic. I love that we get more of Batman. We get more of Barbara Gordon and Nightwing. I think they really did capture Phil Morris's look as John Jones. I mean, he doesn't look exactly like him, but when I look at the Martian Manhunter and John Jones in this story, I see the Smallville Martian Manhunter and John Jones, and that's what I'm looking for. So I really, really enjoyed this one. What about you, Eric?
I enjoyed it, and I'll tell you maybe the most enjoyable thing. If you remember the TV show, that John Jones had this very particular way of speaking, and as I read the comic book, I couldn't help but read every line in his tone, and it made it more enjoyable for me. Like, I think you'll remember what I'm talking about, but just the way he speaks is so much different than everybody else, that normally when I'm reading, I just read it. I don't necessarily read it in their voices, but with him, everything I read was in his voice.
Mm-hmm. No, I follow you there. You know, when you read a Batman comic, for example, right, I basically hear all the animated series cast in my head. You know, Kevin Conroy, yeah. Mark Hamill, right? But when characters have voices like that, they stick with you. And yeah, they totally did capture how he talked. I don't know. I can't really put my finger on it, but in every way that, like, I didn't feel necessarily like Supergirl in Argo was the Smallville Supergirl, I did feel like the Martian Manhunter here was the Smallville Martian Manhunter. And really delving, you know, much like the Haunted story arc, kind of delved into like the Flash and Impulse and all that mythology. This one delves into the Martian background and that mythology. And I like how the comics, you know, can take advantage of stuff they cannot show us on the show because of special effects. You know, and like, hey, like going to the future, I know it's kind of hard on Argo, but we get to see Superman go to the future and all that, so good on them there. But yeah, I like the Batman Martian Manhunter team up, and I like how Batman doesn't like puns, like him and Nightwing are joking about that, and then I think Martian Manhunter tries to make some jokes later, and Batman's like, hey, I like you, but you're not Kent, or worse yet, Queen. I like how he hates Green Arrow.
Well, you know, they're probably enemies in the business world too, you know. So
that's true. This is a competitive rival in business as well. But yeah, just seeing more of the Batman world, you know, seeing the Batcave and Alfred and John Jones just show up, and you know, it does all kind of make sense. You know, tying deep in, again, as a lot of these comics are doing, they tie deep into the Smallville continuity. The white Martian here is going around killing people, and we don't know why. We find out at the end, but it was released when Zod destroyed the Checkmate Castle in Colorado. And again, very deep cut for season. Lots of season 9 deep cuts here, which I love because I love season 9. And I think that was a cool way to explain like where this thing came from and why we hadn't heard of it before. And there's a character in here, King Faraday, and he's a comic book character, obviously, but I know him best from DC The New Frontier. I don't know if you've seen that animated movie or read that comic, but he has a connection with
the Martian. I have the animated movie here, but I don't think I've even watched it, but I have it here on DVD.
Oh, it's really good. Like, I highly recommend it. It's one of the better animated movies because it takes place like in the 50s, so I love the period piece of it.
Oh, I did. Okay. Yes. I absolutely did watch it. I remember he says Batman meets Martian Manhunter at the beginning, and he says for Clark, I have a kryptonite, but for you all, I need the box of matches, something like that. To him, right?
Yeah, he's like, I have a $10 million rock for the one in Metropolis, but it only takes a penny matchbook to defeat you. There's something like that. It's a very Batman.
I watched it. I did watch it.
But what's funny is Phil Morris does the voice of the King Faraday character in that movie. So when they, you know, you get to the end and they kind of figure stuff out, it's like, oh, wow, the King Faraday. He was the white Martian's adoptive father down there. because they have, you know, I guess, you know, Mars had sent her to Earth, similar to the way that Krypton had sent Superman to Earth, and this organization found her, and obviously he was a member of Checkmate in this continuity, and his daughter had died, and since white Martians, obviously like green Martians, they can read minds and shapeshift, she sees a picture of the daughter and turns into her, and they have like this, you know, bond because, you know, she's without a family and he's without a family. I like how they subvert your expectation of, like, you think this is a monster running around killing everyone, but it's really, you know, it's a kid and it doesn't understand right and wrong. And then we find out twist, this is Miss Martian. And that's a really cool twist too. And it reminded me a lot of Young Justice, where Miss Martian, you think she's like this fun little green Martian, but actually she's a, you know, secretly she's a white Martian, you know, and she's kind of a monster in her natural appearance. And no, I mean, I did not expect Miss Martian to show up here. I, you know, as we've said before in here, I've forgotten how these stories play out because it was, gosh, you know, 7 years ago when I read these. But that was a great twist, I think, at the end to make it not just a monster on the loose, but like, oh, this is a kid, it's misunderstood. You know, it had something to say, and I like John, and you see John Jones is good with kids, and they established that earlier in the story with, like, his neighbor and her son and stuff like that. And I just think this is a really well-thought-out story, and I love the character of Martian Manhunter on Smallville, and I like how he got his own little adventure here with their Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Two detectives teaming up.
Totally. Yeah, Detective John Jones, you know, and to see his slice. I always thought, you know, Smallville, right, that there were so many potentials for spinoffs. You know, you could have done a Green Arrow show. You could have done a Flash show. You could have done a Supergirl show. You could have done a Martian Manhunter show with Phil Moore. It's just like just a cop show, you know. I would have watched that. And I like how
the
even
CW was not looking at the big picture like they are now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if Smallville had been today, all those would have happened. You know,
yep.
So I think it's funny that we fast forward to today, and there is an Arrow show, there is a Flash show, there is a Supergirl show, and Martian Manhunter is a main character on Supergirl. And I think, you know, and I actually met Phil Morris a couple years ago at Star Trek Las Vegas. They had the convention because he's been in Star Trek, and so he goes to those conventions. And I met him and got his autograph, and I told him, like, man, they need to get you on Supergirl, man. You got to get on there. And him and his buddy who are at the booth, he's like, yeah. He's like, man, they just need to call us. You know, we don't make those decisions, but yeah, we'd love to do it. So I think it's a huge missed opportunity if, I mean, you know, Martian Manhunter is a shapeshifter. So, like, if he never turns into Phil Morris, even for, like, a scene or something on Supergirl, it's a wasted opportunity, you know?
Yeah. But then again, that could just be money wasted is how they see it, a budget-wasting opportunity.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, it's funny that obviously Martian Manhunter's been on there undercover the whole time. He showed up as Hank Henshaw, which ties into our first story arc, Guardian, right? Hank Henshaw. But, you know, when the Martian Manhunter finally did show up, I thought the special effects were really good. You know, I mean, Supergirl, I guess, had a bigger budget when it was on CBS. And now that they've used more and more of, you know, the Martian Manhunter stuff as the show's gone on, and especially on CW, it doesn't look quite as good as it did in season one. But it's cool to see that character, you know, on a regular basis in live action, because Martian Manhunter is a cool character. You know, I think Martian Manhunter, well, yeah, I mean, I don't think this is a hot take, but he's a lot more tragic character than Superman as far as losing his planet, you know, because he was an adult. And had, like, a wife and kids. So, like, he had a real life he lost. I'm not saying Krypton destroyed was, like, not as important. But, like, Superman was a kid. He didn't know. You know, he hasn't suffered that loss. So, but Martian Manhunter was, like, had a life as an adult and lost his whole planet. You know, so I think he's actually a lot more tragic character. Like, even the captions here, it's like, John Jones, alone. You know, like earlier, and now, like he has a you know, a fellow Martian at the end. So it really is a nice story for him to find to not be alone anymore. So anyway, those are the things I like about Martian Manhunter.
Oh, I'm a huge fan, and I hate that the character doesn't really get it's just due. But I like that they got him on Supergirl. I think the actor on there does a good job. But still, to me, Phil Morris is. Just that's who, if I think of Martian Manhunter, I still think of him, even though I haven't watched that season or those seasons in years.
I agree with you. I think part of it with Supergirl was like for like the first half of the first season or two thirds of the first season. I forgot exactly how many episodes, but they tried to make you think he was Hank Henshaw. So they established the characters a little bit different, but he is Martian Manhunter here from the jump. And I agree that I wanted to see more of Phil Morris as Martian Manhunter. He's not in season 10 at all, which is disappointing. You know, I thought they'd do like one, because, you know, as during season 10, they were kind of going down the list and you're like, okay, let's wrap up all these stories, you know, and I think there's like a one-off line by Chloe at some point. Thank God for our favorite Martian, because it's a pop culture reference, because there was a show called My Favorite Martian, haha, and that was it. So that was a little disappointing not to see him back, because they brought so many other people back for season 10. But yeah, that they wrapped it up here nicely, and I like how they keep the Oreo thing going. You know, remember on Smallville, right? But before they...
Oh, the double stuff, yes.
Yeah. That's the thing with Martian Manhunter in the comics. He loves Oreos. And, you know, even before that, we knew Martian Manhunter was Martian Manhunter in Smallville. Like, Clark found a couple Oreos. That was like a clue. And that was like his thing for like the rest of the show. And yeah, double stuff Oreos, right? It's good stuff.
So. How has he been around this long and not discovered double stuff?
It's like, bro, that was like from the, that was like been around for 20 years, man. Anyway. So yeah, I really enjoyed Effigy, and I feel like, you know, as kind of lukewarm I was on Argo, hopefully I wasn't too negative, but just didn't connect with me like all the other ones. This one really balanced it out, and this was a great little story here. So
yeah, it was definitely, even though you only got a few seconds of Superman, was definitely the superior story. And I love the Martian Manhunter. So, and I do think something about Supergirl is they don't really always explore just how ridiculously powerful the Martian Manhunter is. He never lets it out. But, you know, Smallville Clark said, this guy's got abilities I can only dream of.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of that comes to budget, I think, you know, for a weekly TV show. And that's what's great about the comics. The only limit is of your imagination in the comics. So,
yeah. Well, I think, well, a lot of it is just that you don't realize that he's, you know, a match for Supergirl, if anything, you know, could probably defeat Supergirl. They never make it look like that, at least not to me when I watch it. He just never seems that powerful.
Yeah, gotcha. And then, you know, I guess final thing I'll say about it is there is more of, you know, Barbara Gordon as Nightwing in here. And I like how they kind of comment on, like, John Jones is like, what's going on here? Like, she's too old to be your daughter, but she's too young to be your lover. So, and I think that was a good kind of side comment on a lot of times how they hook up Batman and Batgirl, you know, in the comic books and cartoons and stuff. And I don't know, sometimes I think it's interesting, but other times I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like Batman Beyond, I thought that was fine because they were older, obviously. But I did not like it at all in the Killing Joke movie where they made that a thing in their like 30-minute prologue, which is completely unnecessary. But that's its own conversation.
Yeah, I didn't mind it, but I know a lot of people were pretty pissed.
I think, you know, when you hear, and we're talking about the Killing Joke animated movie that came out a couple years ago, when you hear like, oh, they're going to doing the Killing Joke as a movie, and they're going to expand it, and Batgirl's going to have more to do, you're like, oh, okay, cool. They're going to like expand her part in this story. No. It's like a 30-minute completely different story in front of the Killing Joke. And I think that's what a lot of people are like, what is this? Like, I know me and my friends went to see it at the theater, actually, because, you know, when these premiere, they show them like
for that
the
one day, me and my cousin went and watched it too.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I love doing that. It's a cool experience. But I know, like, we were kind of like leaned over and asked each other, this is the Killing Joke, right?
I already knew it was going to happen. I remember it was like a thing online before it even come out, that there were going to be love interest and people were already pissed. So it was before it come out, I already knew it. So I was expecting.
The whole Batman Batgirl thing, it's kind of wrong, but I think that's why people like it. I don't know, that's why Bruce Timm, you know, made it a big deal in the animated universe. But anyway, I like how they just at least reference that here. And then I guess we do get some confirmation, because I know we had some questions of if there were any Robins or if Dick Grayson existed. Apparently not, because Batman tells Martian Manhunter here that he was alone for a long time, and, you know, Barbara kind of keeps him centered and all that kind of stuff and gives him some perspective. So she was his first and only sidekick to this point. So we got that question answered as well.
Okay. Did he actually say that she was my only sidekick, though? Alone for a long time doesn't necessarily mean he didn't have anybody before her.
Oh, very true. You know, much like Doomsday and how many times Superman fought him, they did, you know, there's still room for interpretation there. So that's fine. I mean, I don't think we'll ever get those answers, but, you know, I like there being less sidekicks than more sidekicks when it comes to Batman. Like, I think he has way too many Robins these days.
Oh, I like there being no sidekicks when it comes to Batman. I think Batman is most effective on his own. I don't particularly like Robin, Batgirl, any of them, honestly.
You know, I think Dick Grayson, obviously, yes. Jason Todd, okay, you have the Robin who dies and he feels a failure about it. And then, like, one more sidekick after that is fine. And then no more, and then Terry McGinnis becomes Batman, like, in 40 years. So I'm cool with that timeline. But nowadays, you got Damian, you got Tim Drake. Poor Tim Drake. They never know what to do with him in the comics. You know, they recently, as of this recording, he's going to be called Drake now. That's a superhero name or something. I don't even know what they're doing with him. There's all these other characters that have been or haven't been Robins, and it's just very complicated. And then it makes Batman, like when they did the New 52 and they restarted everything, like, it's only been 5 years, but he has like four Robins already. So anyway.
Yeah, I think Robin, the idea of Robin, I think waters Batman down. I think the idea of Robin wearing bright colors, stupid. And there's that meme going around. I don't know if you've seen it. Why does Batman wear dark colors? Because he doesn't want to be shot. Why does Robin wear red and yellow? Because Batman doesn't want to be shot.
It's
I've genius. Always thought the idea of what kind of grown man who especially is fighting crime and putting his life on the line is going to let his 14, 15, 16-year-old adopted child go out there and put his life on the line too. It's stupid. Wear bright colors so he will be shot. It's stupid. And the entire thing about Batman himself being able to go in the shadows, intimidate, That's all kind of watered down when he starts having other people with him. So I like the idea of Batman as a lone soldier. No dynamic duo.
There are definitely pros and cons to all that for sure. And then I guess last thing I'll say on that is I like how there was a moment where we see Commissioner Gordon in here. And John Jones is like, hey, his daughter is your sidekick, and he doesn't know that. Are you going to tell him? And Batman's like, that's not my secret to tell. So I thought that was an interesting dynamic. And I will say that's an interesting dynamic about Batgirl, when she, you know, how working with Batman, but her dad is the commissioner, and he doesn't know. And I think that's a cool. And every now and then, they do something cool with that, like the Scarecrow episode of the new Batman Adventures, when Over the Edge is what it's called, which is a spoiler. It's a hallucination, but Batgirl dies, and then Gordon goes to war with Batman because of it. So sometimes they do cool stuff with that. So,
well, I believe in this one. I believe he wasn't saying that's your sidekick. Does he know? I believe what he was saying is she had been clawed by the Martian and almost died. And she was in that chamber being healed. And he was saying she's in there on the verge of death. And you're not going to tell him? No, it's not. It's not my secret to tell. She'll be fine.
Yeah. Very, very like, Batman response.
Yes. Yeah, he's like, when I got her in, it will heal her in a day. She'll be fine.
And it did look like the Bacta tank from Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, that Luke gets put in after the Wampa gets him. That's what that reminded me of, when Batgirl was in there. So,
yeah.
Or excuse me, Nightwing in this iteration. So anyway, well, cool, man. So fun conversation as always, Eric. We'll be back next time talking about the next story arc, which is with Wonder Woman next time on our main
story. I thought it
was
Black Panther, man.
Black Panther is the special. But Wonder Woman is a story arc, so looking forward to talking about those. So, Eric, man, if people want to find you out there, where can they find you?
You can find me at facebook.com/Smallville11thSeason, or you can find me at facebook.com/MMAOutsiders.
Alrighty, and as for me, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach. As for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter at AlwaysSmallville1S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this time, but we'll be back again to continue our Smallville Season 11 coverage. But until next time, always hold on to Smallville.